Hello and welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Well, a few things I'd like to cover before the show really gets going. First is a website I had found which is kind of set up the way this podcast is. It's by the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts, and the website is called askamason.org, or askafreemason.org, actually. And it's a truly wonderful site where you can ask questions, find a lodge closest to you, all kinds of things. I received permission from them to put some of their videos on our website and to mention them. I'm doing just that because it really is worth a look, even if you are already a Mason. Check it out. It may be something you want to bring to your lodge's attention so that they may have the opportunity to direct others there as well. It is a great resource, and my thanks goes out to our brothers over there in Massachusetts for putting it together. Something else I wanted to mention is that in the title of each show I say discussions related to Freemasonry, so I will be adding more emphasis on this. I may read some pieces on a more esoteric nature, and even some pieces that may seem odd. I have a huge cache of articles, and many of them are published by magazines that deal with occult stuff, and none of it portrays Masonry in a bad light. However, some of it deals with some of those esoteric ideas that I was referring to, and which are so prevalent in Freemasonry. And they are just good reading, since they are indeed interesting. So keep tuned in, and you may hear about alchemy or any number of other Gnostic or conspiracy items. The show will remain the same as it has always been, but with more. I'm not taking anything away, just adding. I am also posting our new York Rite Masonry video, which will be on YouTube and Vimeo shortly. Also, if you haven't bought the Whence Came You app, I will be hopefully having a sale on the app the week of July 6th to celebrate our one-year anniversary. It'll be marked half off in the podcast box application. And the first thing I wanted to read for you is just a one-page excerpt, which is from a longer and more explanatory 13-page paper. The excerpt itself I chose because it is the essence of the article, and I believe it may trigger something deep in all brothers and the uninitiated alike. So for the next couple of minutes, sit back, put on your diving suit, and get ready to get deep. This paper was originally delivered to the Masonic Study Society in London, 1925. The Fundamental Philosophic Secrets Within Masonry, by W.L. Wilmhurst, Passmaster 275 PPG REG, West Yorks, an excerpt. Now, to realize a thing is not merely to have notions of it, but to become it, to make it a living reality, to become wholly identified with it. And what is the root and basic essence of our being with which we are to become identified, the self we are advised to get to know? And here we are at once driven against that which is the root cause of all Masonic silence and secrecy. For this basic essence is something nameless, unspeakable, something beyond all verbal and mental categories, yet not, thank God, beyond feeling, for the heart can know and feel what the head fails to comprehend. Yet to cast it into a verbal coinage for the purpose of exchanging ideas, it passes by several names. The East calls it the self, or Atman, the self-radiant, self-intelligent, unitary root of being, and deathless source of all derivative life and multiplicity. The Greek schools called it autos, the self-contained or self-subsistent, the one or the good. The Hebrews describe it as the sacred and unpronounceable name of four letters, the tetragrammaton, or as the Adonai, while Christians personalize it as God in so far as he is immanent in the soul as it concealed, vitalizing spirit. And Masonry describes it variously as the vital and immortal principle, as Adoniram, as the blazing star of glory at our center, as the light of a master mason which never goes out even while all our lights or faculties fail, because it is eternal and immortal, whilst our other faculties are temporal and perishable. But by whatever name we label it, however shadowy and imperfect our thought of it, that it is with which we are to become consciously identified by a direct act of self-knowledge. For as the teaching uniformly declares, the secret of all secrets is that thou art that. To realize this, not merely notionally, but in fullness of direct experience, has always been and still is the goal of wisdom and the goal of initiatory science. It is to become seated and established in the chair of King Solomon. It is to pass from mere manhood and the carnal understanding to consciousness, Godhood, whilst we are still in the flesh, it is the realization of our fundamental unity and identity with ultimate of ultimates. It is the experience to which, in our third degree, the Mason is told to lift his eyes in expectation of realizing it, and which is likened to the glory of a star whose rising brings peace and salvation, and is still more elaborately dramatized in the finding of the lost word and the great vision attained at the restoration to light and the Royal Arch ceremony. If this, then, be the purpose and goal of initiation, the fundamental hypothesis and philosophic secret of Masonry is the solemn fact that God and the human soul are, in essence, a unity, not a duality, and the sole intention of our initiatory system is, by instruction and discipline, to bring about in each of us the consciousness, realization of that unity. Is not such hypothesis of necessity a secret? For if it is to become realized in personal experience, it is an experience which must be prepared for in secret, be realized in secret, and remain secret, incomprehensible, and incommunicable to everyone save those in the silence of whose breast becomes experimentally achieved. That concludes the excerpt. How about that, though? I think that it touches deep and really the main feeling or reason we became Masons. What are your thoughts? Drop a line on the Facebook or Twitter or shoot us an email. I will not be posting this article in its entirety due to the fact I believe it really should be only read by those who have been through the degrees, which is why I only picked an excerpt which was powerful enough to captivate Mason's mind and to raise interest in men that are yet uninitiated. If, however, you are a Master Mason and want a copy, I will oblige. Just make sure that in the email you let me know something along the lines of what a Mason would know. Moving on, this is a piece I lifted from a brother and his site, The 1 Minute Mason, for Friday, April 6th, 2012. From the shortest in his class to the world's tallest man, John Asen Highland Park, Lodge No. 382, Los Angeles, was a 536-pound actor, occasionally billed as the world's tallest man. Estimates of his height range from 7'3 to 8'11, but his actual height remains in doubt. 1,500 brothers attended his raising, which required the assistance of 12 craftsmen. A picture with Asen and brother Harold Lloyd standing together confirms brother Asen may have been in the range of 8 feet tall, since brother Lloyd was nearly 6 feet tall. Despite his extraordinary height, brother Asen was the shortest child in his Lutheran confirmation class. Please be sure and check out his daily posts, which are among the most interesting you will find among Freemasonic websites. You can find it at 1minutemason.blogspot.com. Next is a paper on the symbolism of the beehive. Freemasonry and bees. The bee and the hive have long been symbols of industry and regeneration, wisdom and obedience, with a place in Egyptian, Roman, and Christian symbolism. The hive is often seen in a Masonic illustration of the 18th and 19th century, and both Clovis and Napoleon adopted the bee as their symbol. Although the bee was among the Egyptians the symbol of an obedient people, because, says Hor Apollo, of all insects the bee alone had a king, its use in Freemasonry was secondary to any number of other symbols based on the working tools of a stonemason. Looking at the regulated labor of these insects when congregated in their hive, it is not surprising that the beehive should have been deemed an appropriate emblem for systematized industry. Freemasonry has therefore adopted the beehive as a symbol of industry, a virtue taught in the instructions, which says that a master mason works, that he may receive wages, the better to support himself and family, contribute to the relief of all worthy and distressed brothers, his widow, or orphans. The ark has already been shown to have been an emblem common to Freemasonry in the ancient mysteries, as a symbol of regeneration of the second birth from death to life. Now in the mysteries, a hive was a type of ark. Hence, says Faber, Origin of Pagan Idolatry, Volume 2, page 133, both the Diluvian priests and the regenerated souls were called bees. Hence, bees were feigned to be produced from the carcass of a cow, which also symbolized the ark. And hence, as the Great Father was esteemed an infernal god, honey was much used both in funeral rites and in the mysteries. This extract is from the article on the bee in Evans, Animal Symbolism in Ecclesiastical Architecture. Honey is used to illustrate the moral teachings. A man is exhorted to eat honey and the honeycomb, but warned against surfeit. It was a simile for moral sweetness and for the excellence of the law, of pleasant words and of the lips, and of a figure of love. Go to the bee and learn how diligent she is and what a noble work she produces, whose labor kings and private men use for their health. She is desired and honored by all, and though weak in strength, yet since she values wisdom, she prevails. The quote exists in the Arabic version and is quoted by ancient writers. That the newly converted Clovis would use a bee as his symbol is not surprising. It aligned him with the Christian Roman Empire without alienating those of his subjects who still maintained non-Trinitarian or pagan sympathies. Napoleon was initiated, passed, and raised into an army of Philadelphia Lodge of the Écossais, primitive rite of Narbonne between 1795 and 1798. Considering Napoleon's interest in things Egyptian, his reason for adoption of the bee symbol can only be a subject of suspicion. When Napoleon had embroidered bees sewn onto his robes, it was not as a claim of legitimacy directed at any of his contemporaries, certainly not the aristocracy, whose roots were not Merovingian nor sympathies Masonic. Certainly not the Freemason revolutionaries of the USA who were then embracing republicanism. The bee is a symbol of systemized industry, an obedient people, and of rebirth. It is easier to accept that the Merovingian Freemasons and Napoleon found their way to the symbol by their own path than it is to create a convoluted and undocumented connection between them, as some conspiracy theorists have tried. The beehive is an emblem of industry and recommends the practice of that virtue of all created beings, from the highest seraph in heaven to the lowest reptile of the dust. It teaches us that as we came into the world rational and intelligent beings, so should we ever be industrious ones, never sitting down contented while our fellow creatures around us are in wait or in want, when it is in our power to relieve them, without inconvenience to ourselves. When we take a survey of nature, we view man in his infancy, more helpless and indigent than the brutal creation. He lies languishing for days, months, and years, totally incapable of providing sustenance for himself, of guarding against the attack of wild beasts of the field, or sheltering himself from the inclemencies of the weather. It might have pleased the great creator of heaven and earth to have made man independent of all other beings, but as dependence is one of the strongest bonds of society, mankind were made dependent on each other for protection and security, as they thereby enjoy better opportunities of fulfilling the duties of reciprocal love and friendship. Thus was man formed for social and active life, the noblest part of the work of God, and he that will so demean himself as not to be endeavoring to add to the common stock of knowledge and understanding may be deemed a drone in the hive of nature, a useless member of society, and unworthy of protection as Mason. That was from www.freemasonry.bcy.ca. This week's famous Freemason is James Watt. 19th of January 1736 to the 25th of August 1819 was a Scottish inventor and mechanical engineer whose improvements to the Newcomen steam engine were fundamental to the changes brought by the Industrial Revolution in both native Great Britain and the rest of the world. While working as an instrument maker for the University of Glasgow, Watt became interested in the technology of steam engines. He realized that the contemporary engine design wasted a great deal of energy by repeatedly cooling and reheating the cylinder. Watt introduced a design enhancement, the separate condenser, which avoided this waste of energy and radically improved the power, efficiency, and cost-effectiveness of a steam engine. Eventually, he adapted his engine to produce rotary motion, greatly broadening its use beyond pumping water. Watt attempted to commercialize his invention, but experienced great financial difficulties until 1775. He entered partnership with Matthew Boulton. The new firm of Boulton and Watt was eventually highly successful, and Watt became a wealthy man. In his retirement, Watt continued to develop new inventions, though none were as significant as his steam engine work. He died in 1819 at the age of 83. Watt had been described as one of the most influential figures in human history. He developed the concept of horsepower and the SI unit of power, the Watt, is named after him. He was initiated in a Scottish lodge in 1763. That's it for this week. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU. Also check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Check out the website for links to everything and especially the apps for the show for your mobile device. Take care, and I'll talk to you all next week. For WhenceCameU, I'm Robert Johnson.